Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast today for Financial Month 2020, fiscally fundamental financial month, powerful financial month at Lifebook. I hope you guys are crafting your life visions carefully and exceeding your goals in achieving those life visions. Today, we have a member of the month interview, very interesting guest. He is a Lifebook member. He's a co-producer, I would say, on a very interesting financial podcast, The Financial Coconut. Today, we have Chung Soon Ha on the line. How are you doing, my friend?
Hello, hello.
How's it going all the way from Malaysia?
It's pretty good here. I mean, things are as normal can be at this time. Usually, like, part of my, I guess, quality of life is really focused on traveling quite a bit. So, I mean, that's definitely taken a step backwards. But besides that, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, things are definitely going really well here.
Yeah, it's funny you say that for financial month too. So much of, especially younger people's financial visions are all about travel. Like that's really what people are into right now. That's what you want to kind of spend your money on, right? And then COVID hits, kind of reshapes your financial vision in a large way, does it not?
Yeah. And you bring up a really good point. Like, I do think, I guess what you would consider like your millennials, they do value that whole travel piece a lot more.
Yes.
I mean, we can definitely talk about like why and like later on. But for me personally, I just, at this point, I'm just like, definitely want to take advantage of it, especially since I'm, you know, on this side of the world, because I'm initially from Canada, right? So when you're in Canada and when you're in the States, it's like, you kind of understand it's kind of hard to like, just get on a plane and go somewhere, right?
Right. Yeah, interesting. I didn't know you were from Canada. We're going to have to talk to me. Very interesting. But for the listeners and for me, could you give a brief background on yourself personally and when you entered this financial sphere?
Yeah. So born and raised in Canada to, you know, parents that are definitely immigrants. How I entered the finance sphere, I don't actually remember how it started. I do remember that growing up, the stock news channel was always on, right? So it was always just something I heard in the background.
My dad
was
exposed kind of, to it at a young age. Interesting.
Yeah. My dad was always kind of like paying attention to it, but I didn't really show any real interest in any of that. But I think what really kind of directed me down this path of interest, like being much more interested in like the whole finance space, was my love for video games, right? Started definitely at a very young age, and I loved playing a lot of like strategy games. So games, you know, similar to like Roller Coaster Tycoon, where you know what I mean, right? Like
I know exactly what you mean. Yes.
Yeah. Your goal is to pretty much just, you know, build out a super amazing amusement park. And then you got to make sure you have the money to continue to like, you know, bring in more people, build up crazier roller coasters and all
keep
of that.
Keep the customers happy, keep the park safe without busting your bankroll. I feel like games now are just like running around and shooting people in the face. Games back then used to be like running businesses.
Yeah, I mean, things are definitely a little different, but...
Yeah, Roller Coaster Tycoon, man. You just took me back for a second.
Yeah, but that I think that slowly just like naturally gravitated more toward, you know, after playing all these types of games, I just kind of started looking at life similarly in a sense of like, okay, like, you know, I do have a finite amount of like time, resources and all that, right? Money included. So I was like, how do I use money as one of the many resources I have to essentially shape out the vision I have for my life?
That's one of my favorite connections that I really want to make, you know, young people. That I would love for my little brother to make, which is you can make that money too. Just because your character in that video game has that large bankroll and that five-figure bankroll, you can do that in real life. You need to connect those two things. It's not just some fantasy number. Like, that's a good point. You get successful in these games, and then the next logical step is like, I should try to build that bankroll in my real life. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. No, that's exactly it, right? Like, because with games, it's like, you know, after you finish the game and then you realize, oh, you know, I just wait, you know, 6 months have gone by. What happened? Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And for me, it's just like, okay, instead of continuing down that path of like, okay, let's spend another 6 months playing another game. It's like, oh, I started thinking more about like, actually, how, if, you know, if I view my life more as like a game per se, how would I actually start living it properly?
Wow, right? I like that.
I mean, I think at that age, you know, being in like my early teens, I definitely wouldn't be able to like verbalize it as well as I am now. But that was kind of like the whole mindset I've started like really growing up with,
right,
or like started thinking about, right?
Super interesting. I like that because that, you know, gamifying, right? That is the new hot topic to get people to take certain actions, to get people to stick to things and accomplish goals. But then I also think it's important because later in life, you kind of get jaded and you just kind of get in a routine. Mm-hmm. So while I think it's very motivating, especially to young people who are already so exposed and accustomed to these types of games, you know, everything is a game. I also think that it's important for older people to remain playful and to still look at life as a game and not just one long chore. So I'm really glad that you brought up, especially as a fan of gaming myself, I'm really glad that you brought up gamifying. Very interesting.
Yeah. That's definitely like one of my main characteristics. You know, when people think about me, it's like, yeah, this guy doesn't seem like he's serious in the sense of like, he gets down to business, but he being me, like, you know, doesn't really get anxious much, right? It's just like, okay.
Don't take,
you know,
it too seriously.
Another,
I like
another
that.
Challenge that just pops up. It's just part of the game.
I love that.
Of life. And let's just kind of figure out what the answer or how we get around it, right?
I love that, man. I love that. Yeah. So you went through Lifebook 3 years ago. How did you like the program? And you must have entered in a pretty strong place in your finances, but what did your life look like before going through Lifebook and then after?
Yeah. So I had the, you know, the lucky opportunity to go through Lifebook in person.
Nice.
You know, that's definitely one of the big perks with Mindvalley, right? They do really help create the space for you to experience these things live. I mean, of course, at this very moment, that's not possible, but what I really liked about Lifebook was that it gave me more structure to think about my life, right? In the past, you know, like it was really, everything was just kind of everywhere, right? It was just a very scattered my mind.
Haphazard, yeah.
Yeah. And then once kind of Lifebook kind of, you know, showed the whole 12 categories, it like things just naturally slotted itself in spots, right? And it just made it a lot easier for me to really think like, oh yeah, like, you know, if I do this or if I do that, like, it focuses on this category or whatnot. That said, I definitely went in with my finances pretty strong. I think the one thing that I took away from the Lifebook category the finance category overall, I don't remember if this was actually in the program at that time or if it was, you know, hearing John Butcher speak live at a Mindvalley University, right? So what I really like, what really stuck with me with what John said was, someone was asking, or he was talking about like investing, right? And his example or his story, and you know, you feel free to fact check it with him.
Sure.
But his story was that he always thought when it comes to finances, that he should kind of be, you know, it's the equivalent of like investing in stock, the stock market, right? And he tried that for a while. I think he took some advice from someone, bought into a company, and it did not go well at all.
He lost lots of money in stock. Yeah. There was even like some Russian investment at some point, like in the 90s and stuff. People were just sending money to Russia and like it was real sketchy. Yes. That is a part of the timeline. Correct.
Yep. But then he talked more about like, you know, he then started focusing more on the art side of it, right? Because
he spoke to Garrett Gunderson, who said, why are you investing in the stock market? You know nothing about stocks. What do you know about?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm like really good at art investing. And I remember as a kid, Sotheby's and all of these, like, these are like art catalogs and they're really nice. They're not like, I don't know, some other catalog for a different industry. Like I've seen the jeweler's catalog and it's just like normal. These are like nice art books. And I remember my dad thumbing through them every time there was a new issue, like, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a year, whatever it was, for hours on the couch looking at the, you know, just so he really did have a vast experience of that. And I guess he's made, you know, I'm going to talk to him. I'm going to dive in deep in the art investing, but he's made some incredible trades, like some 6-figure gains. Like that's no joke.
Yeah. And yeah, so he's, I mean, what I remember there was like, he got into art investing because he was naturally already in the space. He has an eye for it and he did really, really well, right? I don't know, you know, 6 figures, something like that. And for me, like what I took away from that idea is that there are, you know, many ways to approach your finances. And, you know, I think this is also true with life. Like there's many, many ways of living your life, right? And you don't need to be good at all of them. You just need to be really good at one or two, right? And yeah. Which essentially is like just stay focused with what you're doing.
Right.
And for me, yeah, so I kind of took that and, you know, when it came to the crypto phase, right? When everyone was just like, oh, you got to buy into this or that. I definitely got tempted, but I also knew it was like, okay, like long term, like I can put some money in crypto and if it goes well, it goes well. But it's something I can literally forget about and not worry about. Because I knew that that wasn't my interest when it came to finances and that I was definitely a lot more interested in like real estate and value investing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I think that really just helped me just solidifies like, you know, John Butcher, he's super successful. And for him, for someone like him as well, like he just stayed with what he's good at, right?
Yep. That's exactly right. Yeah. Because if you have a field of expertise, you can excel in that field in almost any time period. Like, for instance, say you are a crypto trader or stock trader is an even better example. We have some trading talk on this podcast, some interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm saying is, if you know stocks well and that really is your talent, you can make money in a down market. You know, it's not all about passive investing in the right market. It's about learning a market that you're passionate about inside and out, and then finding some way to make money off of it, right? Art investing is a perfect example of something you'd never think of. I know people who have bought classic cars, and they appreciate for six figures, millions of dollars sometimes, these classic race cars. But again, if you don't know anything about cars, you're going to get crushed. So is it a combination of having a passion for the field, which then leads to a lot of time spent studying, which leads to experience and then a high level of skill? Is that the like flow chart, you know what I mean, in the kind of financial passion investing side?
Definitely. And this goes right back to, you know, the whole idea of, you know, gamifying things, right? Like I need to be enjoying what I do, right? So even though art investing can be very, very lucrative, for me, like I just don't have, like, I've never really been interested in the arts.
That's not your game. Yeah, you don't play seven card stud. You play Texas Hold'em. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And so that's something that I try staying really true to myself with. Like,
that's interesting.
Do I actually enjoy what I'm doing? And if so, it's like, okay, let's spend more time learning about it. Let's spend more time talking to people about it, reading things, analyzing whatnot. And then naturally, I find people that have similar values as me who might be more like, you know, more of an expert than I am in that space. And then I will go and find a way to learn from those people, right? And in most of these cases, it's either through a podcast or through some sort of course, but that's kind of the process I go through.
Mm. I really like that, man. You got to learn from those who are more experienced and still skilled in the game than you are and play the game that you love, the metaphorical game that you love, and play the game that you win at and then play it a lot. And that's how to build financial abundance. I really like that.
Yeah.
I want to jump around a little bit here. Talk to me about the podcast, The Financial Coconut. Pretty successful podcast you got going that's kind of Singapore-based or Malaysia-based, right?
Yep. So The Financial Coconut is a podcast that I guess my business partner created. So the challenge with finances or personal finances as a whole is it tends to be a very localized topic, right? Like, yes, you can talk about, the conversation we're having right now is very
broad and principle-based. You're right.
Yeah. Like philosophy about how to approach things, right?
Right. But when you get into the nitty gritty, it can be pretty, you're saying geographically local.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. And for example, like in Singapore, there's no such thing as a 401k or 401k equivalent. And that's because in Singapore, your capital gains are not taxed, right?
Whoa.
And that's, yeah. So like those are things that for people who are looking for this type of information in Singapore and Malaysia, they're going to be like, what is this? Like I can't find any information about a 401k equivalent in Malaysia, in
that's
Singapore.
That's tough. There's so, I mean, if you're listening to a US podcast, a lot of that time is going to be dedicated to things like 401k, which is going to make a large part of, you know, a foreign listener's financial strategy just not inapplicable. You're right.
Yeah. So that's kind of like when I first came to Mind Valley, you know, moved from Canada where I'm definitely exposed to all the Canadian stuff, all the American stuff. And then going to Malaysia is like, oh, wait, like there's no information about this.
Oh, right? That's killer.
Or it's definitely a few years behind. So that's kind of when I started looking more into like, how do I, especially since I do need to learn the nitty gritty, how do I kind of share this information along the way? And then that's along that journey, I met my business partner, Reggie, who created the Financial Coconut podcast. And he too also like kind of talks about things that that are more relevant to like this local region, right? And yeah, so we've been kind of at this for just over a year with the podcast, or just under a year. We're reaching that 1 year mark.
Oh, dang! You guys are doing great for your first year, then, man. Congratulations. That means that you're serving a need when your podcast takes off like that in the first 6-8 months. That means you're serving
for
a
sure.
serious need. There seem to be some broader topics. Could some of our American listeners tune in and kind of nitpick some episodes?
Definitely. I mean, we definitely use a lot of more, local examples, but there are definitely some topics that in general, I guess we haven't heard of a lot of like personal finance podcasts podcasters or influencers per se talk about. And those are usually topics around like a lot of people kind of in the space kind of view like working as like the goal of personal finance is to stop working.
Right.
Whereas our look at this is like the goal that you should be looking at more is more figuring out what you love doing so that you can continue doing it and then using money as a way to subsidize that.
Oh, I love that.
Right. So, like it or not, like there's only going to be like a small percentage who going down that entrepreneurship route makes sense. But the rest of the people is like, no, you will be working. So let's focus on making sure you get into the right type of job. And understand that this job is going to be the reason why you can do a lot of other things that you want to do in life.
That's such a good point. Are you familiar with Maslow's or Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yep.
Do you feel that the global and specifically like westernized career paths have kind of undergone that same climb in hierarchy? Meaning before when you chose a well-paying laborer job, like during the Industrial Revolution or whatever, or you know what I'm saying, like into the 1900s or whatever, you were doing the math to support your family and get by and buying, budget ag to feed your family. And I feel that since then, there's almost been this evolution where it's not only kind of the new thing to do to chase your passion and work for your passion, but it's the right thing to do. Based on the way that the markets have changed, based on, lifespan. You're saying that people just, retire. Like that's what people used to do is just retire and then they'd like croak. But now people are like living a long time, man. They don't want to retire. They end up doing something else. They end up finding a way to give back. They end up starting a small business. It's a new world. Everything's evolved. And instead of just time in versus dollars out to feed my family so we don't starve, now it's more around starting with your passion. Right. And putting that kind of higher need in the forefront. And not only, like I said, not only do I think that's the new and evolved thing to do, but I think it's actually maybe optimal. Like that's the optimal thing to do right now instead of the old method. Am I making any sense with all those crazy words I just said?
Totally understand. I do think that's kind of the message we're definitely being bombarded with a lot. And, I think it all started with the fact that we now have access to information a lot easier, right? And then everything's so personalized for us that looking further out, it's like, okay, like it's all about the individual figuring out your passion and all that. My concern there is that people take it too far, right?
Blindly following your passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely, okay. I could see that.
Yeah. So that's where like, I guess our concern more like primarily is like, yes, you might not fully enjoy the job you have right now, but it plays a role in providing the rest of your life, right? And with the whole lifebook style, like career and finance is just 2 of 12, right?
Right.
And yes, we would love to have like the perfect circle and have everything at like, at 100 or what have you. But in reality, there needs to be compromises, right? And you need to decide like, are you willing to compromise on, I guess, you're following your career dream job in order to, you know, ultimately be able to raise a family. If that's more important to you than that dream job, then it might make more sense, right?
Well, that's the financial, right? I feel the career side lives in that kind of lofty world, but then your financial category checks your career. You know, the financial category says this doesn't make sense. This career isn't going to provide enough, or this doesn't make sense. This career provides way too much and takes up way too much of your time. Dial it back.
Yeah.
So, but then there's also the reality side too, man. And this has happened to me personally, and it has a bit of a happy ending, but sometimes you have a mad, mad passion for something and you put in the hours and you still aren't good enough. You know what I mean? Sometimes you don't have what it takes, and that's a really hard pill to swallow. So I guess what advice do you have for that? Is it about getting clear on your finances and then just kind of staying objective? Objectivity is so hard, isn't it?
I mean, we're humans, right? Like if we're just living life based off like what's the most objective thing for us to be doing, like life would be pretty boring, right?
That's true.
So the way I look at finance, I guess the way Lifebook looks at, or the way Lifebook is structured, is that the quality of life is the last thing based off all your categories, right?
Right.
I kind of look at finance more as the last thing, right? Once you have a very clear lifestyle that you want to live or that you aspire to live, then you use your finances to figure out like, is this in the realm of possibilities? Or can I find a way to start creating that type of income or what have you, right? And then from there, look at like all the different pieces you can play with.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And it's the adding the smaller puzzle pieces to the bigger picture.
Yeah, yeah.
But sorry, we turned like all the way off course from, I wanted to say, from the financial coconut. Go check it out, everybody. Great name, by the way. Really catchy name. I love the financial coconut.
Definitely not mine. So, but thank you.
What are the biggest supporting categories for your financial life, or that you've observed in other people who have a really strong financial life that are supported by this category?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I was talking about just now of having a very clear quality of life that people are looking for, right?
Mm.
And I guess the best example is when you read media, and when you read media about startups and all that, you always hear about the company that like raises hundreds of millions of dollars, it's valued at billions of dollars, as if that was like the thing everyone should be aspiring to do, right? And similarly, when people are asked like, oh, how much money do you think you need to survive, or how much do you need to create that lifestyle you want? People just kind of give an arbitrary like, oh, I need a million, I need 10 million or something like that.
A million, the number's a million. And it's been a million for 30 years, which doesn't make sense with inflation.
Yeah,
I'm a millionaire.
Yeah, so for me, it's like, having that clarity of like, no, this is the lifestyle I want, then actually work backwards of like, this is the, like, you know, the monthly income or the annual income I need to, right? So lifestyle is definitely a very, very important, like, to me, it's like the most important thing.
It's like the barometer, right? And or whatever.
Course, yeah. It might be a way to like cheat in a sense of, oh, you know, now I'm talking about like, I can kind of talk about food and nutrition and my love life. But yeah, to me, like those are definitely all more important than money. And money is just going to be a way for me to make all those things happen.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when you go through, this really just pokes a hole in our Western culture. But when you go through the Lifebook process, almost nobody comes out with finance at the like top of their priority list, the top of their mind, the top of their heart, if you will. All society tells us is that we need to be happy to just get a bunch of money and, you know, get good looking members of the opposite or the same sex. And, you know, you're attractive and you're young and you're rich. And then when it comes down to it, when you really study the life categories, it's like, wow, it's really about my relationships and my physical health and my emotional health and my love life and my relationship with my kids. And the finances are nice and I want to travel, but it's just interesting to me how the most introspective process that I've ever come across really leaves most people with the feeling that they thought that money was more important than it actually is. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we definitely need a certain amount of money to survive, right? And to create a life that we respect, right? But then anything in excess, it's really excess. Like it's not going to make you much happier. And especially if you like gave up a whole category to just make that an extra amount, like
totally.
You're going to feel miserable. Right?
That's a good point. That is what happens too. That's really interesting, man. What do you find are, financial hangups that you encounter that you've helped people along with, or just some of the ones that you see out in the landscape?
Yeah. So the one we talked about is definitely the biggest one, helping people understand that money is just this, a vehicle to get you to where you want to go. Right. Mm-hmm. But first of all, you need to be very clear as to where you want to be. So that's definitely the biggest one. And then the next big myth, is people thinking about passive income, right? They're always like, I want to make passive income. How do I make passive income? Et cetera, et cetera. In that space, when it comes to investing as a whole, I kind of look at investing as there are three main ingredients per se, right? Or three main resources that you're going to be
leveraging,
giving, or you're going to be using to create this investment.
Right? Oh, please share.
There are three things that you should consider when you think about investing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one, the return, right? What type of return are you looking or are you hoping to get?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, how much time are you willing to make to give this investment to work itself out? And then number three, how much time or how much effort and energy are you willing to put into it to learn this whole process, right? To learn the process and to, at the same time, this also means if you're investing in the stock market and back in March when everything just dropped significantly, that's also energy that mental energy that you're putting into in worrying about it.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
So those are the three things, three main categories I would ask people to seriously think about. Right. And for people who say number one for them is I don't want to put any time, I don't want to put any effort or energy. I just want returns, right? I know I need to do something, but I don't know what. That's usually when I just say, just in that case, just invest in a basic ETF.
Right.
Or use a robo-advisor like Wealthsimple in the US. And, they will take care of everything for you. You don't have to worry about, you don't have to worry about the time and effort and energy. And and you'll get relatively decent returns.
That's a good point, though, because people say passive income, but unless you're doing exactly what you just described, then really you are putting in something.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then you're probably passively investing in something that's actually active and you might get your butt handed to you. So
yeah.
That's really interesting. And I like that. I like that three-prong system, because I'm thinking about options trading was something that I was getting into. Mm-hmm. And I realized how much research it was going to take and how many hours of practice it was going to take for me to get to a level to where I could make money my career or even make money my side hustle, online poker.
Yeah.
Something that that's a great example, because that's something that I would not recommend to others, because it has taken me years of study. I mean, not just sitting and playing cards. I'm talking, joining memberships and online quizzes and hours, hundreds, thousands and thousands of hours, dialing in your opening ranges and your three betting ranges and your continuation bet frequencies and different board textures and monotone boards and paired boards and all of this different stuff. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. Now, the secret ingredient is I love it. I can do that because I love it. So if someone loves it, then I definitely would recommend it, because you're going to be able to print money, based on how much time you put in.
Yeah.
People don't like to look at it like a mathematical equation, because there are a lot of factors, but you really can break it down to what are you willing to put in? What are you going to get out? Are you okay with that? And, how much time are you willing to put in, and are you going to be burnt out at the end of the day? Those are all the big questions. And then the minutiae you got to dig into on a personalized level. But yeah, I love that three-factor approach, man.
Yeah. And every time when I was younger, every time I tried to bypass that, things got really, really ugly.
Yeah. You lose,
right?
You lose the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a point in time, back in university, I made a lot of stupid mistakes in university, right? Number one, I opened up my own brokerage account to, trade stocks and whatnot.
Yeah.
It quickly became an addiction because
oh, no.
Yeah.
Man, it's just straight up gambling. That's what I was stunned about. I thought that I was a degenerate playing poker. I came over to stocks. People are making big bets. Really is just gambling on horses, except the horses are companies.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's crazy. Yeah. So in college, you started like over, I don't mean to make light of it, but it's because I've been there before is why I'm chuckling. But you start over betting and betting too much outside of your bankroll and all that.
I literally went all in on like, I guess in poker terms, I would have like a 3-8 suitor or something.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so like literally there's like this small little company like no one's ever heard of. I'm like, oh, I've been reading forums like, oh, this. And I guess essentially like the forum hyped up the company. I'm like, okay, I'm going all in. And literally like just lost all my money at that point.
No.
Yeah, and that was like 4 years of like working, you know, summer jobs and all that, right? It was supposed to be my school tuition.
Oh, that's a hard lesson. As well.
Yeah. And unfortunately, like that lesson didn't end there, right? I mean, I definitely avoided like penny stocks from then on. But then I was like, oh, you know, let's learn technical trading, right? And then I was following someone who was good at what they do. But then I, once again, going back to the whole idea, like, you know, we're humans, we don't operate rationally all the time. I let my emotions get up the best of me. And I got bored one day and decided to go pretty much all in on an option on some really, really volatile company that was going to expire, and the option was going to expire like the next day or something. Right. And like, as of course, you know, the story goes, like you buy it in, it starts dropping. You like, and for me, like reliving all those, that initial experience, all that guilt, shame and all that.
Oh no.
Yeah. And like no way of getting it out. And at that point, you know, my girlfriend at that time came home and she was looking for me to spend some time with her. All I could think of was a way for me to like just let out all this.
The worst. Like, yeah.
Yeah. All this rage. Right. So I exploded on her.
Oh.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't know if you want to, you know, if we continue this or if you want to cut this out. But from there, like I regained my senses relatively quickly. I went to check up on her and she was about to attempt suicide.
Oh right? My gosh.
And like normally when I'm in the right state of mind, I am very well aware of when she is in a depressive state. Right. But in that moment, when she came home and she was clearly in a depressive state, all I could think of was finally a way to let it all out. And, So that was definitely my turning point though. Right. I mean, looking back at it, like this one, it was an experience I needed to go through to fully respect this process of, you know, respect money and respect the process of finance or learning,
letting it affect your life too. That first of all, thank you for opening up with that incredibly personal story. And I think it's a lesson that financial stress and financial pain, it's weird. It clouds your brain. It takes over your survival instinct, and it really can if you're not mature enough or haven't built up that character. Or even slip for a moment, like you were saying, it's crazy how it can completely consume you. It can consume you.
Yeah.
That's wild. But thank you for opening up with that personal story.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and that's the reason why like I'm able to easily say, like, yes, I know quality of life or finance is controlling my or it's going to help get me into my quality of life, right? Like that was the experience I needed to realize that I am like I will never allow myself to or anyone I love to get hurt because of something as stupid as money.
Oh, right. Well, and it was good that nothing, you know, horrible came of that situation. Yeah. And you learned a massive, massive lesson. Wild, man. And there's, you know, there's so, so many stories like that where financial problems spin out of control, destroy a relationship, destroy a life. People lose their lives over this stuff. It's just really, really wild. And like I said, it's because it's tied to our survival. This is what Lyon Goodman talked about, you know, the dollar is whether or not you eat or starve that day. So it taps into that primal instinct, right? Life and death. It's really, really wild, man. Again, thank you for sharing. That's really powerful stuff, man. Let's turn it around before we wrap the show. Mm-hmm. How about some final words for life bookers? They're looking to take their financial category over the top. They're looking to expand their financial domain. What do you have to share with life bookers?
Yeah, so I would definitely suggest anyone to really get clear on the life vision first, right? What exactly is it that you want in all these other categories of life? And then try to, after you like have that clarity, like find a way to just kind of quantify it, right? Like, is this something, let's say, you know, you want to go on some sort of spiritual retreat once a year, right? Like, then how much do you think that annual cost is going to be? Or let's say you're looking to raise a family and let's say, give me a location. I don't know where people are moving after this whole COVID thing started.
I don't know, Hawaii?
Sure,
Cabo, like, Costa Rica? Yeah, I don't know.
Hawaii.
Antarctica. Sorry. Hawaii is a great example.
Yeah, if you're looking to like, you know, you want to raise a family in Hawaii, you love surfing, like that's your perfect life, then quantify that. Like how much would buying a place or not even buying, like can you just rent something there? Can you find the right things? What's that lifestyle? Can you create that? And how much will it cost you to do that? Right. So once you have like kind of a idea, so like, you know, I need, let's say, you know, my annual expenses will be 100,000 in 5 years time in order to do this, then you can now work backwards to figure out like, where am I currently? How much am I making? How much am I spending? And if I project outwards, am I on the right track? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would suggest for a lot of people to like really start doing first. Just get very clear on your life vision. Get clear on the life vision, what's actually important to you, and then, you know, look at the top three, the top five, and then work on the figure out like how much do you think it'll actually cost financially to make that happen. Then everything else becomes a lot easier, right? Because now you're not just gonna say, oh, I need to make $1 million, or I need $1 million, or I need $10 million. You can easily say, I need to find a job that pays me $70,000 full-time job, and I can take a freelance thing that pays me another $20,000, and I am set, right? So that's what I would really suggest for people who start getting their finances together. When it comes to investing, I would suggest just dabble first. Dabble in the sense of listen to certain podcasts about topics that you're thinking about, right? Mm-hmm. Listen to a few different people. Learn the lingo. Learn what, like, especially if it's an interview style thing, like learn from those interviews of the mistakes that people have made, the stress that they might have gone through while going through this whole learning process, and figure out if that's actually something that you're willing to put up with, mm-hmm. right? And once you have an idea as to what it is, or like, yes, okay, like, for example, someone in the Facebook community was like, I want to learn real estate investing, right? So I would suggest if you're going to go learn real estate investing, one of the podcasts you want to go explore would be like Bigger Pockets, right? They do a lot of interviews. And that's how I kind of learned whole real estate investing process as well, right?
You learn a lot of good tips from these people, but you said something important, which is a quality that I wish that I possessed. I possess it in some areas, but God dang, it's such a good quality to have, which is the ability to learn from other people's mistakes. It'll serve you so well in life if you don't have to go through that pain yourself, because there's lots of people out there, like myself included, where someone who is more experienced and knowledgeable will tell them about a mistake that they're about to hit. And I still hit that pothole in the road because I need to feel it to learn it. and I hope for my daughter that that's not the case. But don't you feel that learning from other people's mistakes is a wildly valuable attribute or tool or whatever you want to call it?
For sure. I think like learning from other people's mistake, I don't know how many people can actually pull it off.
That makes me feel better.
I mean, so the only reason I, in the sense, like I've learned, especially when it comes to investing, is because I've been through that journey of of making really bad decisions, right?
You have to feel it. You have to feel the pain. Like I said, someone says there's a pothole in the road, but for some people, you need to feel the car getting hit. You can't just imagine it. Your imagination isn't strong enough, I guess.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah. So after that, like when it comes to investing, it's a lot easier for me to take people's advice on face down, right? Of course, like other parts of my life, I get advice from other people and I still make these mistakes.
Oh, that's a good point. Because it's the thing that popped into my head was, again, I apologize if listeners are sick of it, but poker. Yeah. I learn from other people's poker plays and I'm really easily able to learn from and adapt those things. But then in other areas, you're right. Like, I don't know, when I'm home improvement, when I'm fixing up my house and someone will tell me what to do and I'll try to cut a corner and just have to learn the hard way. Like that's a perfect example. So you're right though. It depends on what area of your life. I think your brain must be wired differently for different areas.
Yeah. If you have something that you can already connect with, you know, the downside of making that mistake, then you are much more likely to take someone's advice.
That's true. That's a really good point. You mentioned off air, you're working on the financial roadmap. Where can my listeners find more of you and what can we expect in the future other than more of the Financial Coconut Podcast?
So the Financial Coconut Podcast is definitely the main thing that, you know, I'm working on, but there's two other smaller projects. Ultimately, I hope that they can become bigger. So the first one that we haven't really talked about, but this is more of a, so there's a company that I'm working with who's actually created an online personal finance game for kids. They've had some really great success in New Zealand and now they're trying to grow it internationally. So that's kind of my skill set professionally, being an advertiser at Mindvalley. Nice. So I'm helping them with that. And then the second thing is the financial roadmap that you alluded to, which is really the, like, I guess the conversation we've had quite a bit, or I've talked about quite a bit, in the sense of helping people visualize how their finances would look based off their life vision, right? So given your top three, top five goals in life and how much you think it's going to cost and when you want it to happen, and give me your current income and expenses, what's the gap that you're looking at and how do we actually bridge that gap? Which is really interesting because I ran this program with quite a handful of people at Mindvalley. And for most people, like they're really, really close to actually achieving it, right?
That's amazing that you're not the first person to say that.
Yeah. But until you see it on paper and you see it in a graph, you're like, oh, if I actually just make these small changes here and there, and maybe, you know, I know that I'm still early in my career and I still have that ability to grow that income. I'm already on the right track, right? I don't need to actually worry about it anymore. Right. And so that's one of the things I like.
Yeah, that's killer, man. You're inspiring me right now. That makes me want to get clear and make those small changes that you just mentioned.
Yeah. So if anyone's interested in learning more about that, go to thefinancialroadmap.io and you can definitely see more. Because one of the things I'm trying to also do there is like create summaries based, you know, anonymize a person's name and then just create a summary of like this person's, you know, in this situation, this is their kind of goals. So you can definitely see how much of that's applicable to you and give you a rough idea as to where you are already without actually having to go through a session yourself.
Is there anywhere that people can reach you personally if you would like to share that?
Yeah, you can definitely find me on Facebook. I think the easiest way would just be to go into the Lifebook group itself.
Yes.
The membership group and, you know, search up Chung Soon, Chung Soon, or, you know, search up Financial Roadmap or search up
Financial Coconut?
Yeah, Financial Coconut.
Bam.
I'll have some sort of post up so then you can, you know, just for you guys to be able to reach out and be more than happy to chat with anyone if they ever want to.
Perfect. I know you're going to get some traction on that. Thank you, Chung Soon, for offering that.
Thank you so much, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Everybody listening, thank you for being Lifebook members. I hope you're having a wonderful financial month. Stay tuned for more wisdom each and every month as we explore the 12 categories together. This is Chung Soon Ha and Jordan River signing off, saying, have an extraordinary day, everybody. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.